Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. Before we begin, I'd like to give a quick shout out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find them on the web at ggportland.com. Before we get to the rest of the episode, I'd like to give a huge shout out and thank you to the awesome people who support me over at patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine. So a huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neil Royal, Nick S., Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to support the show and help me make more awesome content, head over to patreon.com/MTGinQuarantine.
And a huge thank you to Mr. Big Bence for being today's guest intro reader. Be on the lookout for more awesome community members doing their own turns on the intro for the MTG in Quarantine podcast. And on to the rest of today's episode. So this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast is another of the Noah Brewer series, where I bring awesome friends of the show and members of the community on to talk about their own EDH deck building process and basically walk us through the process they go through typically when they try to build a brand new EDH deck. Today's guest is a new guest to the show, but definitely not new to the community at large out there. Introducing community personality and editor EK. Welcome to the show.
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me, MJ. I'm really, really excited to get into this because this is one of my favorite things to talk about.
Yeah, no problem. But before we begin, do you kind of want to pitch some of the content that you work on for the folks out there?
Yeah, so at this point, you guys probably know me best for being one of the members of the Draw for Turn podcast, but I am also the editor for Casual Magic with Shivam Bhatt. So all of his YouTube content, that's me.
And where can we find that if we'd like to see more of your content?
Go to YouTube and search Casual Magic with Shivam Bhatt, and it should just flood your search results with awesome interviews and just really, really interesting conversations with tons of Magic personalities and people you didn't even know were into Magic, but love to talk about Magic.
For sure, for sure. Okay, EK, so again, here on the Noah Brewer series here, we like to try to go inside your mind as a brewer, see how you build a brand new EDH deck from the very first moment you say, hey, I want to build a deck, but I don't know how to get there, all the way to having a 100-card playable deck. Obviously, it's not going to be the final version of the deck your first time out, but again, this is a process. It's very interesting to hear how people go through this, and we would like to hear how you start. So, to begin, how, when you decide you want to build a brand new EDH deck, doesn't matter what it is, what level it is, what is your first step of the process?
So I'm a Timmy at heart, and that building a deck usually involves just finding some like thing that I want to do, whether that's, you know, Wild Pair or Primal Surge, just, okay, what is the thing that I'm going to do at the end of the day? And then I reverse engineer my way back to the deck in, you know, in all of its entirety, I should say, words. It's funny, like I was mentioning before we hit record, I tend to be a little bit different in how I build decks because Magic wasn't the first deck building game that I started with. I was actually a Hearthstone player before I was a big Magic player. So a lot of these people tend, you know, a lot of brewers out there tend to put like 140, 150 cards into like into a Mox field list. I physically cannot do that because when I was building decks in Hearthstone, you physically could not put more cards in your deck than were allowed. So I only ever go up to 100 cards, and then I start going -1, +1, -1, +1 all the way through until I have my deck. Like I never have the decision paralysis of, okay, I have to cut 70 cards, how do I go from here? It's always a tinker and kind of like, if you're familiar with WandaVision, the Ship of Theseus, so I will put together a 100 card list, but that, you know, that 100 card list probably isn't going to be that same 100 cards that I end up with at the end of the process. But because of the way my brain works, I can't have more than the 100 cards.
Okay, so now that we've discussed that a little bit, would you say that you typically, again, I think you'd probably just mentioned this, but just so we're sure, you start typically with what the deck is trying to do, the goal of the deck, basically, versus choosing a commander first.
That, and I don't tend to look at a deck as a commander in a 99. I tend to look at a commander deck as a commander and then like 64 or 65 cards, because that land base, I mean, the land base is almost untouchable. You always know that you're going to have like 33 to 38 lands in your deck. You know, that's non-negotiable. So I pad that into the cards that I'm thinking about when I'm making the deck list.
All right. So now that you've chosen exactly what the deck wants to do, kind of some of the direction that you're trying to go there, what's the next step? How do you start trying to figure out some of the cards that you feel are must or cards that you would like to include, and then maybe identify other cards that maybe you hadn't thought of before? How do you go through this whole process?
So like I said, when I'm reverse engineering the deck, I start with the thing. The next logical step would be, okay, what cards are either going to support the thing or make that thing happen consistently, whether that's, looking at tutors in a high power setting or looking at cards that can either ramp me into something, whether if I'm playing a big mana deck. Like I love the card Apex Devastator, and Apex Devastator is a 10 drop. So if I'm playing a bunch of 10 drops and a card that wants me playing big things to cascade into, I'm going to need like 20 pieces of ramp. So I just logically work backwards in a sense that if this is the thing that I want to do, even if it's mundane, like, okay, I need more than just a cultivate and a Kodama's Reach in my deck. I need to be running like every dork that I can get my hands on in my colors. Those are the kinds of things that I'm thinking about next. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. It doesn't have to be, the big flashy card. If it helps me do the thing, that's what I'm thinking about next.
Yeah, so you're basically building your support structure. Once you know exactly what your deck is trying to do, you're trying to find every conceivable way to be able to get that game plan online
Yeah,
effectively.
at the end of the day, if we're trying to do something, if it doesn't happen, or if it doesn't happen very often, that's kind of, you might look at it, it's kind of disappointing or underwhelming. And, at the end of the day, we want to perform, we want our deck to perform, we want it to do our thing, because that's what's going to make ourselves happy. So we're just trying to set ourselves up for success, really. And I think the supporting cast of a deck is just as important, if not more important, to the deck than, those flashy kind of big ticket cards that people kind of focus on, for lack of a better term.
For sure. Okay, so now that you've built the foundation that your deck's going to be built on, you have the strategy, you know exactly what your deck wants to do and probably the commander that's going to go with it. How do you try to round out the slots in your deck? Do you start trying to go for, again, this is kind of where I really like seeing where people go, is you have the game plan in place, you have the commander in place. How do you round out the rest of the deck? What exactly are you looking for? And is this kind of the time where you start taking some risks a little bit, or do you try generally play it safe?
I'm a risk taker. A lot of the times when I'm playing Magic, especially nowadays, it's on stream or it's with friends for content. So it's a lot more performative than you might otherwise be, just playing with your buddies at a local game store. So I'm adding in my pet cards like Chance for Glory or Seed Time and just weird off the wall stuff. It's the kind of cards that you would say, like, if it happens, it's really awesome. And if it doesn't happen, it's going to sit in my hand. Well, when it happens, everyone's going to have their clip fingers ready on Twitch, or everyone's going to be talking about it on Twitter or something like that. And it gets people excited about Commander. Like those moments that you say, that's what Commander's all about. Those are the types of cards that I try and round out my decks with. And, it usually ends up being like 8 to 10 cards like that.
Yeah, so the big splashy cards that people are in chat especially are gonna say, what does that card do? And take a look up on Scryfall or whatever website on
Yeah.
the internet.
Whether, you know, it's either like a, oh, wait, what is that card? Or a, oh, I know that card. That card's awesome. A lot of the stuff that I like to play is like, it's either too cool to counter or it's too cool to remove. Like I mentioned, Apex Devastator at the top of the show. I mentioned Primal Surge. Lurking Predators is another card like that, where it's just too cool. You want to see it do its thing until it's too late and you realize that there's like 90 creatures on the table. I love stuff like that. I try and go out of my way to fit cool kind of cards that get people talking or get people to elicit a positive reaction.
Along with just being able to spam the board with a bunch of giant green creatures too. That kind of helps.
It's funny, like all I've mentioned are green creatures, but like I look at myself as a Boros player mostly. Like Boros plus a color. So the fact that I'm mentioning nothing but green cards probably is like a subconscious sort of thing that I find really interesting right now.
Hey, I mean, there's no problem with playing a lot of large green creatures. I mean, that's really why I enjoyed playing green a long time ago before I ended up kind of morphing into a mono white Boros player myself. So
it's the Timmy in me, really, I think is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, red and white also have a whole lot of really large creatures that you just want to be able to spam out as quickly as possible.
Everyone always talks about Brazella, Voice of Nightmares, the Meld Angel, as like this achievement unlocked sort of thing. Like, oh, like every once in a while we're going to see Brazella. Like, you know, you might see it once a year. If I have Bruna and Gisela in my decks, I'm going to go out of my way to make sure that they can get Brazella online as consistently as possible. Like, you know, every other game you see this like once a year phenomena sort of thing. Like, I love doing stuff like that.
Yeah, that's definitely one of those kinds of things that it's really cool to see it go off. But yeah, it's definitely a cool thing to see go off, and you want to see if it happens too. Except for the moment when it shuts down your deck, then it kind of sucks. But other than that, it's pretty cool.
And like I said, it's too cool to remove. It's too cool to stop, like, because you might never see it for the rest of the year, or you know. It's a very, you know, it's a very high risk, high reward sort of play style. And that, like, I like to play to entertain. And those are the types of risks and deck building decisions that you take when you're building your deck.
Yeah, I definitely agree with you on that one, because as I've played on more streams, I've definitely found my own deck builds kind of going towards, again, as you were saying, splashier cards, things that seem kind of a little bit out there, honestly. Again, one of the best examples I think I've been thinking about more recently, I recently built Hazoret the Fervent, and it's kind of really fun mono red deck. And I had a grafted exoskeleton just lying around in my box of bulk, and I thought,
Gotta do it.
Out of both games, I have killed exactly two people using Infect and then promptly died afterwards, but that's not the point. The point is I'm finding kind of a silly card that doesn't necessarily win me the game, but certainly makes me the threat and keeps things moving. So, yeah, it's just kind of those funny little interactions that people make people's jaws drop. That's definitely what I'm also in the content game for.
I've also found that, and I've had this discussion with Chase a few times, Chase Mana Curves. There is a content creator meta as well. If your listeners kind of look back at, you know, either the streams or the videos that they like to watch, you know, people kind of just let people do their thing. So when no one is when there's less interaction on the table, you kind of have to go bigger than the person next to you, whether that's going bigger with combat, going bigger with value. And I think that's truthfully what leads a lot of us to play these huge, like splashy, just big ticket cards like Grafted Exoskeleton to knock someone out, or, you know, Lurking Predators, Primal Surge, or Omniscience, things like that, because we have to go bigger than the person next to us, because chances are no one's going to try and stop us. Or if they're going to try and stop us, they're going to try and stop us by going even bigger and trying to win the game.
For sure. I honestly, I think we could do an entire episode based just on that, just how content games can be completely different from your games out in the wild.
Yeah. No, I tend to like, I keep notes, and I tend to run a little bit more removal heavy than most other content creators, because I enjoy playing combat decks, and to play a combat deck, you have to play scrappy. It's very hard to compete with Sultai value or just blue yada yada value nowadays, that we have to dumb the game down. We have to grind that game into something real scrappy where everyone's got like a creature, an artifact, an enchantment, because that's the only way that we're going to be able to play on even terms. So it might not necessarily be what a value player is looking for, but it makes for interesting games every time. And at the end of the day, if it's an interesting game, people are going to talk about it. And if people are talking about it, well, it means you're doing something.
Definitely, definitely. This is also the reason why I found myself playing white a lot recently, because it's really
people,
good at dealing
people undervalue
threats.
You. People undervalue you when you're playing white as well.
Yeah, white is just so awesome because you have answers to a ton of threats. Sure, it's a little bit slow, but again, I think what people forget about with white especially is that sometimes we're not, especially with the content creator mindset, is that we're not necessarily trying to win the game. That's not necessarily our first goal. I mean, it's cool if you win the game and we're trying to play to win, but we're also trying to just have a good time. And and that right there is, we're trying to play memorable games, not necessarily the best games, you know, or the most optimized or efficient games, I guess.
And I think that's why I tend to brew for not necessarily CEDH and not necessarily like high powered games. But there's this like healthy medium between like a social game and a social game with strong cards. I'm not necessarily interested in, you know, playing ad nauseum on turn three and drawing out my deck. You know, I want to build into that. You know, I might do something like that later in the game, like turn seven, turn eight. But I'm looking to get to turn seven, turn eight, you know, maybe a little bit deeper into that game. You know, I want to see things happen. I want to see people do their thing. And to see more people do their thing, that tends to mean a slightly longer game.
Yeah, and again, it's just basically what you want to get out of the game when you sit down at the table. I mean, I know that my listener has been hearing me get into CDH more because I've been curious about seeing what happens when you take the things that we're trying to do in more casual tables and basically just put them into a blender and just try to, you know, turn that thing up to 11, honestly, and just try to get there as quickly as possible. And it just, I feel like in a lot of ways it makes me a better casual player too. It's like, I've had my chance to really crank the volume, crank the speed of things. And then it allows me to look at my own casual decks a little bit differently and say, you know, more casual games is when I really want to just have a game where I don't necessarily really have to, I can have fun with friends and I don't really have to necessarily think about what my deck is doing. And then when I'm out with CDH is I can have a social experience while also trying to really rack my brain and give myself a serious, serious challenge. There's definitely something for everyone in all of these levels. And, you know, it definitely, I think, just branching out definitely makes me a better brewer. It sounds like it made you a better brewer. And just us trying to find a variety of experiences and really cultivating our decks to fit exactly the kind of gameplay experience we would like to have.
I actually find myself learning more about brewing and deck building from every other format that's not Commander than Commander itself, because they just think so differently. But because there is very explicit intention with what they're trying to get out of the game, you're able to kind of laser in on, you know, just this mindset of, okay, I want to get this out of my deck. I want to get this out of the games that I'm playing with the deck. How can I frame that into the deck building process itself? Because I think that's really, really important. You know, you can play these powerful cards, but it's all about how you intend to use them. Like, unashamedly, I'll play tutors in a very casual deck, but it's about what I'm tutoring for. You know, there's a very big difference between tutoring for Thassa's Oracle and Demonic Consultation than there is like Wild Pair or Sunbird's Invocation or just some big mana like, you know, do quote unquote do nothing enchantment. You know, there's a huge difference between the intention behind what you're doing there. Mm-hmm. And I think that's something that, you know, a lot of people can take a look in the mirror at, you know, you can run powerful cards, but if you're doing powerful things, not powerfully, you know, there's a huge difference. And, you know, it'll open up different opportunities and different ways to think about, you know, how to do different things at the table. Yeah. And it might actually end up getting you more comfortable in a wider variety of games as well.
Yeah, it's definitely all about intent. I talk a lot about intent, rule zero, social aspects of the game on this podcast, and it really does come down to what you're trying to get out of the game. And the fact that you are in ultimate control of what your deck does. Again, I've been thinking more recently, you know, I'd be the kind of player in a more casual environment where if I brought a Protean Hulkout, let's say, which is a great combo piece in more optimized builds, yeah, you could just go find some random value creatures off Hulk. And it's just like, they don't necessarily have to lead to you winning the game, but they could certainly help you find a couple creatures, thin out your deck, maybe. I don't know. Just seems like a really cool little value engine, if you're, especially even if you're just playing mono green. Let's say, it's like, there are definitely ways to be able to build these decks, both in a combo, in an effective, efficient shell, as well as in a slower battlecruisery style shell. And yeah, it really just all comes down to what you want to get out of the game, what the play group intends for you to get, and then ultimately, well, you just find fun. And there are really no limits to that.
I like to look at a game, you know, you're only one-fourth of the game. You're only one-fourth of the fun being had at the table. Therefore, your actions, your deck is responsible for 70, you know, you could argue, like, you know, you're responsible for your own fun, but you put it perfectly. You're facilitating the other people at the table as well. You're not just responsible for, you know, for your actions at the table. You're responsible for everyone at the table. You're curating everyone else's experience just as much, if not more, than your own experience. And I think a lot of, you know, it has huge influence on a lot of the cards that I like to play in my decks. Whether that's like that's a really cute card, or I love that card, or I just, you know, even if it's I don't like this card, but I respect it, you know, when it comes to like Redain or Thalia's in particular. I want to get the table talking, and if the table's talking and being social, then chances are you have a better chance of having a good time.
Well said. So now that we've really gotten to talk about intent, we've really gotten to the meat of the issue here, I think the final question I have for you, EK, is you're always building new decks, right? And why don't you take the next couple minutes here to just tell us about a deck you either just finished, you've been playing maybe just a couple games, or you're still working on, that you're really excited and you really want to share with everybody?
So I have my Labor of Love decks, and like I play those on streams all the time, but I'm always all about like that next deck. And a lot of times I don't necessarily get hyped about new cards right away. I tend to be like a year behind, or in the case of this deck that I've been working on, 12 or 13 years behind. I've been building a deck around the card Mael's Aria, if you're familiar with it.
I have seen that card played a few times.
It's this really, really weird enchantment. I'm pulling it up for your viewers' sake, or your listeners. This is an audio thing.
Yeah, maybe someday I'll end up on like YouTube or something. I don't know. You can never say never in regards to this podcast.
So Mael's Aria is a 3-mana enchantment that says at the beginning of your upkeep, put a +1/+1 counter on each creature you control. If you control a creature with power 5 or greater, and you gain 10 life if you control a creature with 10 power or greater, and you win the game if you control a creature with 20 power or greater. So this it's a Naya enchantment. So it's a very, you know, you would think it's a stompy enchantment, but I've been looking at this card with Jared Carthalion.
Mm-hmm.
Which is the commander, it's the Naya commander from Commander Legends that's all about Monarch. But if you're the Monarch, if damage would be dealt to Jared, you get that many +1/+1 counters instead. So I've been looking at a lot of cards like that, and I've been loving to play, like, I wouldn't call it control, but I love dictating the pace of a game. So I'm looking at, you know, Monarch and kind of group slug, but not necessarily like group slug to the point where you can't play the game. I think there's a fine line there. I'm looking more at like goad effects and just getting people to do things in the game and getting the game to progress in a direction. And this card's always been super interesting to me because it's a Naya card that says you win the game. And there's just very few cards in general that say that, let alone a card that's not in blue that says that.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been in the tank so hard, just getting in the nitty gritty, figuring out how I can make this work. And I finally landed on Jared to make it work.
Nice. I know that a lot of people out there were really hot on Jared when the set came out. Was it 2 years
but
ago?
But no one actually like got into it and built Jared decks. They're just like, oh, that's cool. Those are the types of commanders that I tend to gravitate towards. Is the commanders that you think is cool, that you think are cool on the surface level, but I try and deconstruct them and just find this really cutesy kind of entertaining way to do something cool.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of how I look at things. Is I always like looking at commanders that either people have never heard of or ones that people have vastly overlooked and try to be able to find some value. Sometimes that involves me just going completely out in the left field with what I'm trying to do strategy-wise. So I definitely hear you on that one.
I tend to work that way as well, but I'll even take it a step further and I'll play a commander in a way that you could never conceivably like think about doing, like Saskia Storm, for example, or just playing an archetype in a color combination or with a commander that you never could think was possible. And I think that's where people kind of lost interest with Jared in particular. It's like, oh, he's just a Monarch commander. He's like Marchesa, but in green instead. And no, there's way more to it than that.
Yeah, and that's what I really love about EDH is you just get to really build whatever you want because there are cards out there. There's over 30,000 cards, and I know that number. I'm quoting that number way too low, but I know there's just basically an endless number of cards out there that can go in these kinds of decks. Again, it all depends on what you're trying to do. If you're trying to optimize it, obviously that lessens the card pool, and there's nothing wrong with that. But depending on your intent, you could just have a whole bunch of weird pet cards with, you know, very niche applications that would be perfect in a deck if you decide to say, you know, this commander is cool. I don't necessarily want to do the thing that's printed on there. What if I try this instead? And then you could just take that run with and see where it goes.
Yeah, and it could be as something as simple as, okay, if I play Saskia, then I have access to the colors to do this thing. Or if I play Kinyas and Tiro, you know, I have the colors that I need to make this cool Super Friends deck work. When people brew, they don't just necessarily have to focus on one part of the card. They don't necessarily have to focus on the whole card. But if you just see one thing like, oh, you know, Samut is a human, so I can build a humans deck out of Samut. Or Najeela is a warrior, I can build a, you know, a cute kind of budget warrior stack out of it. There's more, you know, there's always more to a card than what's there on the surface level.
Speaking of Najeela, did I ever tell you of the legend of colorless Najeela?
I have heard rumors and whispers because I've tried to do something similar to that in the past.
Yeah, well, you should definitely check that out because I actually built that. I talk about it on the podcast a lot. And
okay.
Is there
an episode for me to look up?
Yes, you should take a look at, and again, I'm going to give a huge shout out to a friend of the show, Neo Royals, House of Pricey Cardboard, where I did pilot colorless Najeela for the first time in its lifespan. It's a really cool game, kind of hard to find on YouTube, unfortunately, but I can try to find the show notes and send that over to you.
I have actually found it already. So if you are interested in listening to a 15-minute and 7-second deck tech on colorless Najeela, you just have to scroll back to December 2021, and it's just right there.
Yeah, I did a deck tech on it. It's a really cool deck. And basically outside the box of me saying, I can take Najeela and try to water it down a little bit. So it does still does the thing with some warriors.
Yeah.
But it does it in a way that's challenging. It's a puzzle. I have to really think about where my five colors of mana. Not every mana rock in there is a mana lift effect. I'm running a lot of one and two, maybe three. I'm running some of the banners. I'm running some random mana rocks that provide me one or two colors of mana. How do I try to get Wooburg out of this? And
yeah,
it's a challenge right there. And that's what I think really endears it to a lot of people out there who've listened, who've played against it, because it does the thing, but it does it in an extremely battle cruiser type way, to the point where Najeela can pretty much be played at a very low power table and not be completely overwhelming.
Yeah, I know one of my friends has built mono red Najeela, and let's just put it this way. It is very hard to build a quote unquote bad Najeela deck. You really, really, really have to restrict yourself. But I always say, when you really, really, really restrict yourself in your deck building, you always end up with something incredibly cool.
And you end up with with a deck that people are going to remember. People remember my Najeela deck I talk about all the time, not just because it's Najeela, but because it's that Najeela deck that does that one silly thing that people are just, what, when you bring it out to a table.
Yeah, that's my Samut Primal Surge deck nowadays, where Primal Surge is the only non-permanent in the deck, so if you cast this big 10-mana sorcery, you just flip your deck upside down onto the table. Just then and there. Nice. So I love these weird, quirky, like, you know, I've never seen that before. And once you've seen it, that's the only deck you ever want to play against, because you just like watching it do its thing.
Nice. Definitely. All right, EK, I want to thank you for taking the time to be on the podcast here today. It's been great having you. I wish we'd been able to get to this earlier, but, you know, life happens, so I'm glad we're able to get this in now.
Yeah, I agree. 2022 has been pretty crazy, let me tell you. So I'm appreciative that we could finally make this happen.
Yeah, no problem. It's been great having you. All right, and again, before you go, where can people find all of the content that you're involved in?
I like to plug not myself, so I'm going to plug all the projects that I've been working on.
For sure.
And like I said at the beginning of the show, Casual Magic Shivam Bot. Shivam is a wonderful human. Check that out. And I've got some other irons in the fire with Kristen on the Commander Advisor Group. So be on the lookout for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. So hopefully we have some news about that in the near future.
Yeah, got a new kick-ass logo a month or two ago, right? For that?
Yeah, and then 2022 happened. So we've been focusing on just taking care of ourselves. And, you know, that's you know what? I'll plug that. Take care of yourselves. Like, you know, get that extra hour of sleep. Get that, you know, go to bed early. You know, drink water, eat, that kind of thing. You know, your mental health is important. Because if you're not in a good headspace, you know, you're not going to have as much fun playing Magic. Let's just put it that way.
Yeah, I definitely second that. It's been a hard couple of years for all of us. And again, out there, just try to do what you can to make sure that you have fun and relax as best you can. I know it's difficult during these trying times, but hopefully you can use this podcast and, you know, friends of the show and other podcasts, other content creators as a way to unwind for a while and just, you know, think about all the awesomeness that is Magic the Gathering.
Truthfully, that's like, I mean, I know this is the case with you. That's why you started doing this in the first place, just to have an outlet to be creative and be social with, you know, with other people out there. And I know a lot of people are in the same boat. So what you're doing is really awesome. So I'm glad that you're doing this.
I really appreciate that, EK. Thank you. And I'll definitely have to have you on the show again at some point when you have more time.
When I have something more interesting to talk about, let's put it.
come on, don't cut yourself short.
I won't. I'm a self-deprecator when it comes to humor, so ignore me. I'm humoring myself.
All right, thank you. And if you're interested in seeing my colorless Najeela deck tech, any of the episodes I referenced today, or just any of the episodes in the MTG and Quarantine podcast, you can find the entire back catalog on the usual podcast outlets, your Googles, Apple, Spotify, Player FM, Rocket Cast, Pocket Cast, and just a whole host of other ones. I always forget the names, but if it's a major podcast outlet, odds are you can find my podcast there. You can also find me on Twitter at MTGInQuarantine. If you see the happy-looking Ulamog wearing a pair of headphones, you found the right place. I'd also like to utilize this opportunity again to give a huge shout out and thank you to all the awesome people who have supported me over at patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine. So another huge shout out to Mr. Big Benz, Anomaly, Draco Lucian, Neo Royal, Nick S, Infamous Fridge, Frugal Brutal, and Jen of the Filthy MTG Casuals for supporting the show. If you'd like to help support the show and help me make more awesome content, head on over to patreon.com/MTGInQuarantine for more information. And I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode of the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody.